Welcome to today's podcast, Hella Malversations. Keeping it real. Welcome back to Hella Malversations. My name is Olga Rosales Salinas, and I'm your host, a San Francisco Bay Area Moms podcast that we host every single month. Today's episode is with Dr. Liu of CCRM and a leader in the AAPI community. We're going to be sharing all things fertility and other good leads and things to note. I'm here with my co-host, Jean, a contributing writer of San Francisco Bay Area Moms. Can you say hello, Jean, and tell us about your experience as a contributing writer with San Francisco Bay Area Moms?
You know what? It's coming up on, I want to say, 7 years this year.
Eight.
Eight? Has it really been that long? God damn, it's been a long time. Okay, so almost 8 years with a blog. And now I have two kids, you know, bought a house and have not had a chance to, like, get back in the fold of, you know, monthly writing. But it's not, but it's been so wonderful to be a part of this wonderful collection of moms and to see us grow as a community and focus on all things in our community as we uplift and protect each other and our community and learn and grow with each other.
That's very, you said the key word is protect each other, right? This is what the benefit is of being in community, is that we can look out for each other's needs. If we run into anything in our personal lives, we can sit down, write 600 words about it, and share with the larger community that follows us and supports us and attends our events. And really get knowledge out, but also be able to vent and community build, right? So thank you for being with us and being our co-host today. I'm very, very excited to introduce this community to Dr. Liu and her work at CCRM, the fertility clinic in San Francisco Menlo Park. So please say hello. Tell us a little bit about your background and your experience at CCRM.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so delighted to be here and talk about these topics that are very dear to my heart. So I finished training in OBGYN and infertility, and before joining the esteemed clinic at CCR in San Francisco. And I myself is Asian American, and so I very much care about taking care of my community and making my patients feel like I'm on the same team as them, and then I can understand all their specific challenges. So as Olga has mentioned, CCRM San Francisco, though we're located in Menlo Park, we have a pretty sizable Asian population. So like roughly 60% of patients are of Asian American descent, either recent immigrants or people that have been here through generations. Very happy to kind of bring light to this little bit understudied areas and help advocate for my community.
Well, thank you for the work that you do. You know, must be hard for moms or for, you know, aspiring moms and aspiring families to come to you and to ask really hard questions. And I'm sure that you can't solve all of those questions or address every issue, but I feel like if a family's in your office, it's because they're on a journey. And so that must be very, very unique. Can you tell us some biggest or big misconception about fertility that you can share with our audience today?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that sometimes I see, particularly in the Asian community, there may be a delay in seeking care for fertility issue because it's kind of culturally sometimes feel like a taboo. So people don't talk about it, even if they have a family history. So, you know, people don't grow up being aware that maybe that will become an issue for themselves, because there could be genetic ties and family history that play a factor in people's fertility. And then the other big thing is that that fertility is only a woman's problem, which I think sometimes can be really worsened by some cultural-based gender biases, especially I think more prevalent in Asian culture. So there's a lot of weight and a lot of shame around the topic of infertility in the Asian culture. So sometimes I really see that affecting people's ability to reach out and access care. And oftentimes, time is sensitive because, as we all know, as women, we have a biological clock as much as we don't like that. And that could really affect outcomes of treatments. And it's tough, tough, tough place to be. And sometimes guiding them through this journey, I always highlight in terms of this misconception when it comes to fertility being a woman's issue. I always tell them 30 to 50% of the couples who end up needing IVF is because they have a severe male factor, something severely abnormal on the semen analysis that you don't know until you do the test. So we
Oh,
have.
the patriarchy.
Yeah, so it's definitely like a space where I feel like I can advocate a little bit for, like more generally like women's health and
Right.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's great. Is that, I mean, I guess my follow-up question was, is what's a specific problem that you address, but maybe it's a clearing up the taboo that surrounds fertility.
Yeah, so typically, first consultation is kind of where you try. I try really, really hard to build like a therapeutic alliance with my patients. And really, sometimes like the first, 15% of the visit is just kind of hearing them talk and see where they're coming from and where they have what they've gone through. And then you pick up on things that you realize they may have set beliefs about, their fertility, that you say, hey, maybe actually this is a different way to think about it, and kind of just make sure I'm, build a rapport to be guide them through the process of first at a macro level understanding what reproductive biology is between men and women, and then kind of jumping in at a more micro level to, hey, based on your history, I'm really suspecting this. And these are the testing I want to do for you. And I tailor that to their history and explain that to them and say, hey, these group of the results that will guide me down this treatment versus that treatment path.
How knowing that you have 60% an Asian population that come through your office, how much of that do you consider when you give advice? I know that, I'm just hearing you talk about it, and I know that in the Latinx community, there's a lot of parallels with taboos, but I'm sure it's different in AAPI just for a lot of factors. If you could share a little bit about that.
So I mean, I think, it's pretty well studied, even though we don't quite understand why that Asian patients tend to have worse outcome, even through like the help with the fertility treatment. So, and honestly, this racial disparity, as you mentioned, Olga, is really happening across all ethnicity and races. And in like the Society of Assisted Reproductive Technology that collects and publishes these treatment outcome data, we see that Asian patients see lower success rate when it comes to like cumulative pregnancy rate and like birth rate compared to their white counterparts. So I kind of like always have that in mind when I'm talking to my patients and like kind of figuring out what are the underlying reasons that could be, I need to be more highly aware of because of their ethnic background that may not, they may not get the same piece of information if they were to go to a different provider that is not as attuned to how their ethnic background could play into this bigger picture.
Love that. And I know there's so much to be said about representation. There's a comfort level, right? Like with any doctor, if they look like you, if they know your cultural background, or they have the same experience as you, first of all, you're saving time. You could cut out so many questions just by like knowing what someone's experience is, because it's either firsthand or you're adjacent. Jean, you're also part of the AAPI community. What do you feel about these taboos that the doctor is describing?
I when Before I got married and I was in my 20s, it was a Filipinos tend to start a little younger because of education and college, et cetera. And a lot of my older cousins were like, "When are you gonna get married and have kids?" I'm like, "Dude, I'm like 20 years old. I'm no rush." But there's a stigma about like when you should have kids and that you should have kids earlier on. I'm like, "Dude, I need to like have my life." And so I think there's with Filipinos in general, I think there's always of like, "Oh, you don't want to be an old mom." Like at my age, I should have a grandchild. If I go back, I'm like, that's ridiculous. but it's culture shift. It's about like where people start their adult lives over there in the Philippines versus where being a Filipino American here, where I'm starting my adult life. I mean, I have two young children. I've got a 10-year, almost 10-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I have my kids in my mid-30s. Here in San Francisco, that's kind of when people are starting to have kids later in life. I was already considered a geriatric mom when I had my first one. And I think some of my older relatives were like, "Wow, it's that there's been a shift with Asian Americans about like when we're having children." And a lot of it is kind of like where you're at. If you're in a more urban setting, like San Francisco, I'm speaking for myself. Women in my age are just having children a little later. If you're somewhere that, I know moms who live in different parts of the country that I'm friends with that had kids when they're younger. I'm like, yeah, because that's kind of the community you're in. So I feel like it varies, but there is a every Asian ethnicity has their own like cultural stigma about like, oh, when you should have kids. And I remember being 13, something like, "Aren't you a little old to have kids?" I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I'm like, "I'm in the prime of my life. I would not have been a great mom in at 20. I'm a much better mom at 46, because I was, yeah, I feel old now."
Well, yeah, we don't have to share our birth dates, but I was in no place or responsible maturity
No,
to
I
be a
would have been a
mom
great mom,
yet.
but and I look at now, I'm like my kids, my daughters, and because I'm raising, and they're multi-ethnic as well, so there are two different kinds of Asian. They're Filipino Chinese Americans, so they have the benefit of learning, mommy and daddy's cultures, but also, understanding that there are going to be these taboos on both sides of the family, and know that they're also Americans by birth as well. These are things associated with our culture, but they don't define you. I think something that you bring up, Angela, that you bring up taboos, but I also think of you bring up family history. There is a taboo, and I can say this with Filipino culture, and I can't say this for anyone else, but like we don't want to talk about the bad stuff that's happening, like medical history. It's like pulling teeth to find out that you have a history of X. It could be cancer, it could be whatever. How do you overcome, I guess, when your patient doesn't have a family history, because like that wasn't something that wasn't dis that was discussed, like mental health.
So I explained to I kind of like segue in by saying that there are like genetic factors. And I ask a very detailed family history and specifically pinpoint the things that I know are related to fertility and say, hey, do you have these? And oftentimes, maybe that's not too re revealing because, as you say, they don't talk about it, so they wouldn't know. But if something really unusual that I see based on their testing, so for instance, like a woman's egg quantity, ovarian reserve testing, often has a genetic component to it. So we ask about your family history. Do you have any female relatives that underwent menopause early? Because we are born with a set number of eggs that you'll decline over time, but the amount that you're born with is kind of genetically related. So if your mom or your sister or your aunt went through menopause early, that probably is related to you starting out with a lower reserve. And maybe that's why, you don't think you're super old at this point, but your testing is relatively lower than someone else your age. So yeah, I try to kind of put those things together by first like assessing their family history. And kind of like help guide them in understanding specifically as a person their fertility status. What does that all mean?
I love that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I want to ask something that's kind of related, but when we think about fertility, the first thing that comes to mind is, being labeled a geriatric pregnancy, right? Because I had my first at 35, so I was definitely there. And how scary that word was. All of a sudden, I was thinking about an unhealthy pregnancy, which I had assumed would be healthy. And then my next thought was, if I can't get pregnant or if this pregnancy isn't viable, like what are my treatment options? So I guess my follow-up question to you would be, what is the treatment process in fertility? And like, does age play a role in how we recover from treatment or how our body reacts to treatment? Can you describe a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just want to like put a clarification out there. We try to move away from geriatric pregnancy because that
Oh,
is so
that's a
like
terrible word. I'm glad
it's awful.
that finally someone is saying that. It is a horrible word.
Yeah, we just like call it advanced maternal age. It sounds better. So we were trying to be better in terms of using the, more proper PC medical terms. But yeah, great question in terms of guiding people through different treatment options. I kind of describe them like as like three tiers in terms of like the easiest and then a stair step up to like the most intensive. The easiest would be like, hey, we'll give you some like ovulation induction medication that can help you maybe grow more than 1 or 2 eggs, kind of like enhance your natural fertility a little bit based on your history. Sometimes it's an appropriate treatment if your problem is like irregular periods or you're not, ovulating on a regular basis, but you're otherwise young. So by your age, you should have a very healthy egg if we can get you to ovulate 1. Okay. And that very, I also see that issue like irregular ovulation being very common because the syndrome that's related to irregular periods is polycystic ovarian syndrome. You may or may not hear about it before, but that's extremely common in South Asian population. So like research has shown it's like 2.6 higher in South Asian populations compared to like Chinese. So like, if like just I can kind of get a sense of is this person possibly a PCOS patient to me based on their history, and they're kind of adding that to their ethnicity to get the full picture. So if that's a patient that I'm talking with and using a little bit of help and then maybe helping them time intercourse at the right time if we get them to ovulate, then they can easily get pregnant that way. Not just like enhancing their and kind of tweaking their natural cycles a little bit to help get them there. Then, if there is slight male factor, say like on the male partner's testing, there's some abnormality on the semen analysis, we might be able to overcome that by adding in the intrauterine insemination procedure, which is a procedure where we use a catheter, we wash and select the best sperm. I call them like the Olympic swimmers of of the sample. And in addition to like, inducing the ovulation, we also do the IVF procedure to get the best sperm into the uterus at the right time. So like, timing everything and getting the uterus, the sperms as close to the egg at the right time as possible. And that may work pretty well, even for people who otherwise testing are completely normal, like which is they get labeled a very frustrating diagnosis, which is unexplained infertility. It just means that we don't have the right test to figure out what's going on. But oftentimes people get that and they're like, what do I do? Well, that's the ovulation induction with insemination is the starting first line treatment. So and then like the most intensive obviously would be in vitro fertilization where people are taking injections and going through an egg retrieval process. But really depending on how people, this is why I think that therapeutic alliance is super important. People have very like building a family is very personal. It's a very personal decision and everybody have a way they envision they would build their family. So it's so important in that first visit for me to kind of understand what are their goals, what do they envision that road, that journey to be like, and then slot in what I think they will find reasonable. People might not be ready for IVF right away. People might be ready for IVF from the get-go. The most important thing I feel like in terms of achieving success with a patient is to make sure they can stay on that therapeutic and treatment journey with you as long as they can.
That's great.
So, yeah. So, my job is not to tell them what is right, is to kind of help guide them to find what feels right for them. And then to make them feel like I'm a partner on their journey. And we might hit some roadblocks along the way and things might not turn out the way we thought it was going to turn out. I share in their disappointment and maybe we need to change our strategies. The important thing is that you feel like I'm right, by your side.
Great. That's great. This is a really good spot for us to take another break, and acknowledge our sponsors. When we come back, we'll be talking about trends, future goals, and personal insights from Dr. Liu. We're joined today with Jean from San Francisco Barrier Moms, contributing writer, and I'm your host, Olga Rosales Salinas, here at Hella Momversations with San Francisco Barrier Moms. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
At OrthoWorks, the number one provider of Invisalign treatments in the San Francisco Bay Area, Dr. David Shun and Associates specialize in providing orthodontic care with the goal of creating healthy and beautiful smiles for children and adults. OrthoWorks is now offering free consultation for SFBAM family members of all ages. To learn more and find your nearest location, visit orthoworks.com.
Welcome back to Hella Momversations with San Francisco Barrier Moms, SFBAM. My name is Olga Rosales Salinas. I am here with Dr. Liu from CCRM Fertility Clinic right here in San Francisco, Menlo Park. I am joined today by my co-host, Jean, a contributing writer with SFBAM. And we have been talking about all things fertility and mom life. And Jean and I were complaining about perimenopause. So it's been full circle for us. Thank you for sticking with us and for joining us today and listening to Health Conversations in your car, on your walk, on your afternoon walk, while you're drinking coffee. I love this space. I love the podcast space because you can join in from anywhere. You can be doing anything and learning so much. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. If you're ever considering mom blogging, ever want to share your story, please visit us at sanfranciscomoms.com. Join our newsletter. Reach out to us at info@sanfranciscomoms.com and inquire about being a contributing writer. I would be your editor. I'm super, super kind to you. Not a mean editor at all. And I help you develop stories if you have story ideas. So thank you for joining us. I'm going to jump right back in and ask Dr. Liu about current trends in fertility, specifically at CCRM. For a mom that might be listening or expecting mom, a hopeful mom who might have tuned in specifically about, what's in the future as far as trends for fertility and maybe some hope. Can you give us some hope here?
Yeah, absolutely. Reproductive medicine as a scientific field has always been really exciting. Lots of advances constantly happening. And CCRM being like one of the oldest IVF clinic in the country, we established ourselves in like the late 80s, are really have been staying on top of that cutting edge. So generally speaking, I think things to look out for, there are a lot of focus on access to care in terms of making fertility treatments more accessible for people of all backgrounds, because a reproductive issue doesn't see, doesn't discriminate. Like, everybody can encounter that. So I think, the huge, huge focus in the reproductive work is world is to focus on making the fertility treatment accessible. And there's a lot more use of fertility preservation technology in terms of increasing. This technology was only recently came off the experimental label as of 2013. So really it has been adopted in clinical practice widely as of like just 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago. So there's a lot of study for egg freezing in terms of applying it to different patient populations. It doesn't have to be restricted to, just elective use or young women that are faced with cancer diagnosis that need to go through egg freezing to kind of have hope for, their future after surviving their diagnosis in terms of building their family. But also like other conditions, like one instance is sickle cell disease, where if you really want to treat someone with sickle cell disease, you would radiate them and give them bone marrow transplant. And that radiation can often compromise their future fertility potential. So there's study looking at applying egg freezing to that population as well. So we're really just finding ways to support everybody in terms of supporting everybody's hope for having a family, because it's like an innate human desire. Everybody deserve to be able to do that. And I think one other really cool thing, and CCRM has applied that to our regular IVF treatment program, is what's called in vitro maturation, which allows the use of prepubertal ovarian tissue. So if there's a young girl who hasn't gone through puberty, so not having periods, but are faced with a very serious medical diagnosis that require treatment that could compromise her future fertility, we can't do egg freezing for girls that young. So, the technology right now is potentially freezing just the ovarian tissue and using in vitro techniques to mature those really immature eggs in the tissue that we freeze, and helping those eggs mature in the lab to become a viable pregnancy that potentially that girl, once they survive their medical illness, can come back and use. And we use that at CCRM's IVF lab to help women who may otherwise have a poor response in terms of their ovarian stimulation, so get fewer eggs than we would expect. We try to culture all the eggs, the immature eggs in our lab, and try to get them to mature and hopefully use them and help them get a baby. So that's kind of how CCRM Canada has been staying on top of the trends. And yeah, so
Has that happened successfully? Been able to
yeah. I kind of tell patients that I describe them as like backup eggs. So like, do the retrievals, like the embryologist will look under the microscope and find the mature ones that they can inseminate right away. And then the immature eggs are kind of backup. And if they mature, then we inseminate the next day. And we do get like, genetically normal embryos out of those eggs. So it's like really, really powerful that we have that technology to help patients.
very sci-fi, and
Yeah.
I love that. And
Yeah.
if you're listening on your walk to this podcast and you're also surprised, same, because I'd never heard of that, and I'm glad I was here for it. Right, Sean, doesn't that sound amazing?
Well, the egg freezing, and I think the thing what you mentioned, Dr. Liu, about taking someone who has some kind of medical ailment that could hurt their future, it's looking at women's health from holistically, from essentially from start to finish. You're seeing a woman through her lifetime and not just looking at, okay, treatment and what this does right now and making them better, but looking at their future.
Exactly.
And I love that, because I think that in terms of women's health and fertility, I think you need to start thinking about that from the very beginning, and how all those things from youth, et cetera, progress and how that can affect your future fertility.
I'm gonna go ahead and ask a hard question, and hard because it could be seen as political, but if we're talking about our bodies and literally our choice, I have to ask it. which is how do you think this political landscape is changing IVF and fertility, and what do you think access will be in the coming years?
Yeah, that's a great question. Very much talked about in the fertility world. But that kind of brings me back to John's point where it is so important to protect a woman's reproductive access and choice in at any point in their life. And this is not just about birth control. This is not just about abortion rights. It's about people's right to decide when and how they get to build their family. So, fertility is protecting a particular aspect of that, but everything is on the spectrum and needs to be protected. And I mean, I wish I could tell you how I see things will go, but it's so unpredictable. I would say that at least California is on the right track in terms of making this more accessible. So, Governor Newsom did sign into law a mandate that require more companies to make fertility coverage available. I think they're trying to roll it out. Hopefully overcoming some logistic
I feel like we voted on that.
they did
I feel
vote
like
on
you mean
that. Yeah,
to
it was a
make
measure.
it
It was a measure
insurance
in
covered?
the last election
Yes,
where,
yes.
yeah. And I
Yeah,
thought
but
that was fabulous.
yes, but logistically, I think realistically they're looking at maybe pushing it out like mid-year this year or even potentially like next year. And then this is like inclusive, all-inclusive fertility care, includes LGBT family building because family comes in all sizes and shapes. So like, however you want to build your family is whatever needs to be supported. So I think at least in California, I have to say I've pretty hopeful that we're relatively immune to the larger national landscape, but it is something I want people to be aware of that we need to fight for.
No.
Yeah, I mean, you said the word fight.
Yes. Yeah, I believe
I
that.
think part of that fight is just awareness, right? It's you being in the know about not just new technologies and trends, but also being able to provide it in how many languages did you say the doctors speak in your office? Just maybe you said that when we were offline, but
We speak Mandarin, Korean, Japanese.
that's great. And so that covers a lot, and so creating accessibility, being representation, having support for families of all shapes and sizes, like you said, is part of the fight. And so thank you for the work that you do. And I keep saying that because it is so important. What is your vision for advancing like awareness besides just being having your office? I mean, maybe part of this pod being part of this podcast is advancing
Yeah,
awareness, but
absolutely. Yeah.
what other avenues are you looking for to just grow awareness?
Yeah. So, I so Resolve is a huge national organization specifically for fighting and advocating for access to fertility treatment. So, that's one avenue I look forward to being more involved in. So, members will get like their day to kind of speak with their representative, their legal representatives, and kind of advocate for these causes. But also, I feel like in this day and age of social media, we just like as REI physicians or infertility physicians, we need to just kind of be the one that kind of guide the conversation and be in that space. So I'm learning to be on those platforms, but I think that's a very important part. But obviously, having you and having this opportunity to speak with you and kind of having you help with spreading awareness is an honor.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're honored to have you. So there you go. Tell us about the National Fertility Awareness Week, which is next week, I think April 20th through the 26th. And tell us how you learned about it and how long it's been going. What is it?
So it's like a dedicated week where we, try to bring awareness to how prevalent infertility really is and how common it affects people's ability to build their family. It a lot of the activities are run by Resolve and across the country. Like we wear orange, that's kind of the color for the National Infertility Awareness Week. So we will be doing that with the CCRM team. And fun thing that they do for the New York CCRM team is that they would go to the Empire State Building, and the whole building gets light up and gets lit up in orange lights. So just a lot of fun activity, and that like in, a lot of fertility docs are involved in terms of just being able to spread the awareness about this issue that affects a lot of people.
Yeah. One interesting thing that's happened in this political landscape is that I feel like the attack on fertility and IVF in particular made people look it up. Like, what is it? What's involved and why is it an issue? And I think a lot of people learned in that way. So maybe this is good. Because I think without that, it was like another thing that people really didn't talk about, and that they had to deal very much in secret, especially in Latino community. I know that that was the case, and maybe it is for you as well in the AAPI community. So because there's more conversations around it, hopefully people are, this is the first time I hear about the National Infertility Awareness Week, but that's really cool, that it exists and that people participate in that. Famous buildings in New York actually participate as well. That's very, very cool.
I think that is true, but we want to, make sure people know, have accurate information about it, as
Right.
opposed to reading about a lot of, because misinformation is rampant, and I think especially about reproductive health. And I think there are forces actively trying to shape which information is out there. So, yeah, I think everything kind of all ties into reproductive health and reproductive rate, and fertility is one piece of it.
Yeah, it is kind of cool to see it all in the same conversation, though, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
because I felt like for the longest time it was just an abortion rights conversation. But actually, if I can
Even
bring
on politically, it
right.
was always just about, the abortion part of it, and not as, the other side of it, of women wanting to have children.
Right. I mean, in the one conversation, very conservative person would say, a fetus is a baby and abortion is abortion. And then while their significant other is getting IVF treatments, and those two conversations were never happening at the same time. So I do appreciate that that is about choice now, and it's about family planning. That's a good positive thing that I think has happened. What would you give and take an impact to mom listening right now, who's on her walk or having her coffee? What advice would you give to those newly diagnosed aspiring families who get a diagnosis and maybe they're not going to have an easy go at it? They might have to try a little harder. What's the best advice you can give to that mom right now, potential mom?
Is that you're not alone in this journey, and you should be able to get the help that you need. And the help that you get should be one that's tailored to your particular treatment of your particular situation, and your doctor needs to listen to you in terms of, symptoms related to your periods, and your goals in terms of what your family will look like, and that you need a physician alliance. Speak with a doctor about it, and don't be afraid to reach out, because there's a lot we can do to help you.
I love that so much. Now, I'm meeting you for the first time today, but CCRM has been part of the San Francisco Bay Area Moms community. I feel like you guys table with us a lot. You have a lot of representation at our events, and I know that we've written articles and bylines about your organization and the work that you do. When can we share with our community, or what's the next event that we're looking where they might be able to visit us and see you and maybe pick up a business card?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're located in Menlo Park, and it's actually our, I want to say, our 8th year anniversary coming up in June.
Wow, congratulations.
So we've been around since 2018, though the entire network started in the late 80s. So yeah, we're hoping to really have like an open house, and I'm happy to share like info about the open house that could have, have people come and check us out.
No,
And
that'd be perfect. Yes, I'll make sure to tag your information in the notes of this podcast. But if you want to give us your website and maybe your
certainly.
email, just so the person listening can take that down.
Yeah, totally.
What is it?
Oh,
What is
sorry.
your website?
Oh, I thought you meant you want me to tell you later. Okay.
No, don't tell me now. What is your website?
So, tell you right now.
I'm
So
gonna pull
it's
it up, see who's faster.
CCRMIVF.com.
CCRMIVF.com. Okay.
And then you can go search for location. You see San Francisco Bay Area Fertility Clinic. And so we're in 1060 Marsh Road, right off the 101 freeway.
Perfect. And your phone number is 650-646-7501. Or is that your fax?
That's my fax.
You still have a fax. Congratulations on that. Let me give you your phone number, which is 650-646-7500. Again, that's 650-646-7500. That is your landline. And you are open Monday through Friday. And you're also open on the weekends, 10 to 12 p.m. That's San Francisco Bay Area Fertility Clinic in Menlo Park and off of the 101. So thank you so much for being here. Jean, did you have any last questions you wanted to ask the doctor before we let her go?
I think what for you, what are you most what brings you the most joy in the work that you
Great
do?
question.
Yeah.
Great question. Like achieving these milestones with the patients, like, 'cause, I understand exactly how hard they've been working on building their family, and that first pregnancy test that's positive. Oh, that's such an amazing feeling. So that's kind of what I work for every single day. And like,
And I think those kind of testimonials are the things that are going to help people find you and feel comfort with you because it's the road to growing your family is so unique to every single person. It's not, no two pregnancies are the same. Everyone's bodies are different depending on when you have your children as well. So thank you so much for helping bring joy to these families and build families.
Yeah, and
Thank
doctor,
you.
if you want to close this out with a final message, maybe if you want to do it in Mandarin, that'd be awesome. Share a final message for families. Not to put you on the spot, but if you want to, I'm open to it. I think it's cool that you have so many dual languages at your office, and for somebody listening who might appreciate that message in their language, that'd be awesome.
Sure, I guess I'll just, like introduce myself in Chinese and then like
Yeah, whatever you want to do.
大家好，我是刘医师，我现在在CCRN San Francisco 的诊所，是不孕症的专科医师，希望说如果你们有对fertility 有些问题的话，能够到我们的诊所来看我。
Thank you guys. Thank you both
Thank
so
you.
much. It's so good to see you again, Sean, and I hope to connect with you offline. But thank you for
Yes,
being our
please.
co-host today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you,
And
guys.
thank you, Dr. Liu. Thank you for
You,
sharing
Dr.
your
Liu.
story and your experience. And thank you, listener, community member, for joining us today and every month at Hello Momversations. Again, if you need a community of moms, you want to write about your experience, you want a little break from the kiddos, please join us at sanfranciscomoms.com. We have events, we've got a blog, and this podcast, of course. There's plenty for you to be involved in and to join us on. So that's sanfranciscomoms.com. I'm your host, Olga Rosales Salinas, and you can reach me at info@sanfranciscomoms.com if you want to ask questions about becoming a contributing writer. So thank you again. Follow us online and join this community and join us next month for another episode of Hello Momversations. Thank you all.
Thank you.